Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you from the Indian Wells Tennis Garden for the very first time. Our previous two editions from this tournament have been recorded at Tennis Podcast Towers, Indian Wells, which is a very fine place to record. But this time around, we thought we'd try the on-site experience. David, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well. It's a bit of a different on-site experience, though, for us, isn't it? Because usually we're out and we can hear all the hubbub in the grounds. It's very quiet in here, isn't it?
Little bit of media hubbub, but by that I mean just doors opening and closing. So those are the sound effects you'll be hearing.
And a little bit chilly. We had a sort of collective fail this morning where Catherine said, oh, hang on, let me just go and get my jacket from the car. Oh, nope, didn't bring it. Okay. And David said, oh, I didn't bring mine either. And then I realised I hadn't packed mine either.
Right.
And yeah, really, really quite cold right now, but...
There have been some other collective fails over the last 24 hours, which I'm not sure yet whether we can go into, but mate, we'll see how the next hour goes. We'll see how much credibility I can establish over the course of the next hour and see whether we're in a position to reveal.
Did you need to tease it?
It just occurred to me.
We could have just not told
anyway. We come to you on Sunday evening, still a full week to go of the BNP Paribas Open 2023, which, if it's not clear, we are loving.
Yeah.
We really are loving life here. So thank you to On Location for bringing us here. I'll tell you what, everybody here is loving life. And by everybody, I mean 45,000 people in the day session yesterday, which is an Indian Wells record. I mean, look, we were remarking on it throughout the day. This feels busy in a way that Indian Wells doesn't feel busy. You know, it was sort of elbowing people out of the way to get where you need to get to, and genuinely hour plus long queues for pretty much every food outlet. It looked ever so slightly on the edge out there. Nobody was rowdy or anything, but just in terms of whether there was enough room for all these people. And we looked into it, or rather Matt looked into it, and it's not only an Indian Wells record, but it's a record that exceeds the day session record at the US Open.
Yeah, the US Open set their day session record on the first Saturday last year, and that was 42,000 and something, and this was 45,000 and something. And when you include the night session here as well, it was a record for attendance generally at a day at Indian Wells, day and night combined. Amazing crowds. As you said, I did think it was on the edge yesterday. I wouldn't have wanted to be a fan having to queue up for food, you know.
Or a fan queuing up for a Tennis Podcast meet and greet, quite frankly.
But, yeah, I mean, I've always been, I suppose, a little bit sceptical about whether the month of March should just be taken up with essentially two tournaments, Indian Wells and Miami. But that's, all, you know, because I've never been to those events. I must say, when you're here, you do realise that they make the most of the time they've got in the calendar, and it is an incredible event, and it gets so many people through the doors seeing tennis, and that does feel like a good thing, and it does feel like it's worth more than 7 days. And yeah, so I've changed my tune a little bit having experienced it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, via these meet and greets that we've been doing at the Steve Fergles booth here on site, which have been a real treat, thanks to everybody that has shown up and saved us all from embarrassment. You really have done us proud, and we'll be continuing to do them throughout the tournament. We have had the chance to speak to tennis fans here, speak to ticket buyers, and ask them, where have you come from? Do you come every year? How many days are you here for? And it's pretty extraordinary the lengths that people go to come to this tournament that is not a Grand Slam. Okay, most of the people here are American. We've encountered the odd person that has come from overseas. But within America, we've got people driving 20 hours to get here, you know, and on a dedicated Indian Wells holiday. Again, yes, there's the odd person that's going to Disneyland and tacky on a couple of days in Indian Wells at the end. Great itinerary. But by and large, people are going to significant efforts to get here. And you know, we're always trying, as people within tennis, we're always trying to take ourselves out of it a bit and judge things objectively. How much does this really matter to people whose lives aren't 24/7 tennis like us? And it does feel like on a fan level, this tournament has something extremely special.
Yeah. And look, because it's 15 years since I last came here, I didn't see Stadium 2 when I was here last time. I mean, that is a worthy stadium, a centre court for a lot of tournaments. And it is a brilliant tennis-watching venue, this. All over the place. All the supplementary courts, sort of 3 to 9, are brilliant. The practice courts are very easy to go and have a look at. And it's just, I mean, yes, the queues for food yesterday were alarmingly long. And I thought people were so decently kind of...
Oh, I'd have been rioting.
I mean,
we should probably disclose at this point that they do have a fast lane for people with accreditations, yeah. Which is why I wasn't rioting and why I haven't been stripped of my accreditation for rioting.
All
in
those
a food
calm
queue.
People that I've just described are now yeah. throwing their devices at the wall with that. But anyway, no, I mean, seriously, it was very marvelous
to make people not hate us. Remember,
yeah.
A bit of a challenge.
Well, moving on. look, there is still a little bit of tennis going on tonight, but not a lot. Today's tennis is going to wrap up pretty early. That's partly because of what I think is excellent scheduling that they have here. Their night session starts at 6 p.m. and it's 2 best-of-3 set matches.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought that would be a great idea?
We've thought for a while there are ways around some of the scheduling issues that tennis has. Yes, best-of-5 sets complicates that at the Grand Slams, but this is evidence in itself that this works, I think.
Mm. What's going on at the moment is actually a doubles match involving retired player Kirsten Flipkins. She's coming on the centre court at Indian Wells.
The second biggest tennis stadium in the world.
Yeah. Retired Kirsten Flipkins.
Good for her.
She's out there at the moment. She wasn't scheduled to play on this court alongside Bethany Mattek-Sands, but Aryna Sabalenka's opponent in the scheduled final match of the day on Stadium 1, Lisa Sorenko, withdrew moments before that match was due to go on court. So there's been a last-minute switcheroo. And I imagine, Kirsten Flipkins fans aside, ticket holders for Stadium 1 would have been glad that Ilya Ivashka managed to extend the Daniil Medvedev match to 3 slightly unexpected sets, because they at least did get a decent match on the singles front. Medvedev did win through pretty handily at the end after some excellent troll energy after losing the second set.
Yes. I mean, the first set was just uneventful, wasn't it? It was 6-2, and you're thinking, there's no issue with the court here for Daniil Medvedev. He's playing absolutely fine. And things turned in the second set. And, it ended up becoming a very interesting match indeed.
Well, don't listen to what we've got to say about it. Why don't we hear from the man himself?
Yes.
Daniil Medvedev.
Hello.
Welcome.
No camera.
The tennis podcast.
I'm relaxed. Hello. Thanks a lot.
Talk us through that win. You're 16th on the bounce, despite some very well expressed frustrations with the court.
I feel like I spoke to a lot of players in the locker room, and I feel like a lot of players are struggling. Cannot say everyone, because there are some players that can play good on this court, especially the ones who can easily generate power, probably more from their wrist. I'd say for sure someone like Alcaraz, Fritz, probably Rublev, and even them, it's not that easy for them here. Probably the slowest court out there in the year, and I mean today there was, and it's so tough. Like I could see, I watch matches on TV just to see how other players try to react, adjust, and so many matches you feel like the guy's not playing bad, loses 6-1 just because it comes to the moment where you go for a 30 shot rally and whoever misses loses the point, and in a way it's like a little bit of luck, because after 30 shots anyone can miss. So that's crazy how today's second and third set, in my opinion, I played the same and just managed to hit maybe one or two better shots in important moments, and that was enough. And that reminds me a lot of clay, but at least it's much easier to move here.
Are you saying it's slower than clay?
Slower than Roland Garros, for sure, for example. Wow. Then there are some clay courts that can be like wet, and especially with the rain, cold conditions, they're really slow. But I would say it's comparable. It's comparable where I can move much better, so that makes my life easier. On clay, what's tougher, that it's the same. It's tough to make the ball go through, a lot of rally, stuff like this, but I move worse than my opponents. So here that's not the case, and that can help me.
We saw you leave the court after the second set. We also heard some of the things you said. It was very funny. But what do you say to yourself when you leave the court and come back and suddenly you're 5-love up in the third set? So what happened?
Yeah, honestly, I will tell you honestly that when I leave the court, I leave it just to go to the toilet, so not to reset myself or something like this. You can see me leaving a lot of the times after winning a set. Mm-hmm. So that's just straight to the point to go to the toilet. So that was the same here. But for sure, yeah, I talked to Mohamed, and I got frustrated, because especially if you can rewatch the game at 5-3, I think there were 2 points, 15 love and 30 love. I was hitting so good. Like 10 shots, cross line, cross line, cross line. Nothing happens, just literally nothing. And that's not normal for hard courts. And so then, yeah, I was a little bit, how can we say it, bad talking to Mohamed. But when I say bad talking, just trying to win time.
Do you agree with Mohamed? Like he said to you, you're a professional, you need to accept this.
Yeah, 100%
agree. Is that actually good advice?
That's not an advice, but my attitude was not good enough in the second set, and that's what I kind of said to myself, that in the third I have to try to be more concentrated on the tennis and not on the court, which is very tough after some points where you feel like you've done the right thing and you lose a point. And that's what I managed to do better in the third. Not the whole set. I still got frustrated a couple of times. But managed to do it better. And I agree with anyone who said that I had to be more professional. And that's what I managed to do in the third set.
What would Jill say to you after a match like that and a moment like that?
Well, first of all, he agrees with me that this is crazy how slow these courts are, and that it's... how can I translate it to English? Struggle for everyone. Everyone is struggling. I saw Karen against Davidovich play today. They were both struggling. I saw Zverev and Suvori. I felt like they were both struggling. And when I say struggling, it means that you can do, again, 30-shot rally where you feel like you've done so many good shots and it's not going to be enough to win the point. And you're like, what else can I do? And well, the only thing you can do is continue playing this way, and that's what Jill says to me. Try to win the struggle, you know, everyone is struggling, try to win it, just like I did today.
I just wonder, when you have a moment like that at the end of the second set, which I mean, it was mild compared to say the US Open a few years ago, but the American crowds here, they remember that from you. They obviously also remember you winning the US Open. There seems to me to be quite a lot of affection for you from tennis fans who remember those moments. When you're out and about, do you get people talking to you more about the US Open title you won or the moments like you had on the court at the US Open the year before, the couple of years before?
I honestly don't have much people talking to me about the US Open 2019, but I damn, I have a lot of people who talk, this is going to be on Tennis TV, bro. Like, I think that's the most popular line anyone can say to me. Like, every second fan that sees me on the street, especially in US, just tells me, this is going to be on Tennis TV, bro. I'm like, yeah, great.
Can I tell you that we met a fan yesterday who had a T-shirt custom made that said, shut your fuck up on it.
Well, at least that's not... I said it once. I wanted to say I never said it. But I said a lot of things during my career. But I feel like definitely Americans love the entertainment. Like the first match against Nakashima, there was a guy in the crowd. He was acting like it was an NBA game. And I was like, yeah, that's how it is in US. You know, tennis is in a way different here, tennis crowd. And that's great because that's electric. And... If we get full stadiums, I think here it's going to be the case a little bit later in the second week. That's going to be pretty great.
Just on a slightly different note, we know that you're a tennis obsessive. You know, you like watching a lot of matches. You already said today.
Only when I'm in the tournament.
Indeed, yeah.
If I lose, I don't watch one match.
Yeah, then you're on the PlayStation.
Yeah, maybe. True.
Well, I wanted to ask about backhands, because I have a thing for backhands. I love backhands. I have a list of my favorite backhands, but at the moment, it's a...
Is this like an obsession, or...?
Kind of, okay. Yeah.
Be careful.
At the moment, it's a WTA-only list, because it's I think on that tour, it's a backhand-heavy tour. It's a lot of great backhands on the WTA tour, but I need to make a list of men's backhands that I like. And it's not necessarily a list of the best backhands. It's just the backhands that give you a great feeling and that look good and feel good. And I wonder whether you can name some players on the ATP Tour whose backhands you really, really like.
Well, first of all, if we talk about the the beautiful part of it, it's one-handed backhands, just because it looks so beautiful, so natural, and it actually can be different technique, and it always looks beautiful if people, of course, put it in. But so that's why I'm actually going to put it aside and talk about double-handed, because I'm a double-handed backhand, so that's going to be easier for me. I think Sasha's backhand is great, looks great, and when he's in top of his form, he's pretty solid from it. I'm actually going to mention Davidovic, because when I played him in Rotterdam, I was really surprised with how he was able to hit his backhand's cross and even down the line, and that's what I saw in the next tournaments as well. So that was not an accident, and that's what I didn't feel like he was doing before. Just in generally talking, I feel like almost 90% of players on tour have more solid backhand than forehand, but can make more points on the forehand. And who else can I put there?
Djokovic?
Yeah, but I feel like that Novak's forehand is so good right now, last 4 years, maybe even before, but I haven't played him much before, that, for example, when I play him, I feel like I'm less in danger when I play on his backhand. The way his forehand is just brutal, wow. I would say. Probably one of the best on tours for me. So that's why I don't want to talk too much about his backhand, but it's actually really beautiful, and I mean, the way he can slide to it is amazing.
Andy Murray played him the other week.
Yeah.
Is that a polite no?
No. The thing is that, in my opinion, almost every double-handed backhand on tour is kind of, when I say the same, on a good day, that's a shot that people are not going to miss. And same about Andy, Sasha, Davidovic, Karen. On a good day, they're not going to miss a backhand. And so you have to try to find a different way. And same about me.
Would you put yourself on the list?
Yeah, I would definitely put myself on the list, because I like good backhand cross, 20 shots to see who misses first. And I like my backhand.
Who are your favorite players to watch generally? What matchup would you see on the telly or on an order of play and think, yeah, I'm going to watch that?
Djokovic, Zverev, when they were before Sasha's injury, was amazing to watch. Olympic Games, US Open. But there are so many good matchups. What else can I choose? I just like to watch tennis. What did I watch the other day? I mean, I watched Alcaraz Kokkinakis. Was a great match, in my opinion. You know,
the famous Carlos Alcaraz.
I think I would. Yeah, I think I would like to see more of Alcaraz, Novak, and Rafa because when he beat them both in Madrid. Again, I was injured, so I didn't watch the matches, but I watched Instagram. And that was a highlight reel. There was so many highlights from these matches. So I think that could be, great. And it's a pity that when Carlos won US Open, he didn't have to face one of them because I think this could be amazing to watch.
When you watch Carlos against Kokkinakis, are you looking at his game and wondering yourself, well, what will I do when I play against
Honestly,
him?
Not at all. No. I feel like my mind does it automatically that if I have to play him, here it can be only in the final, I'm going to remember the matches I saw and maybe try to remember, I saw this and that. But I like to watch Carlos play because, in my opinion, pure talent, the way he can hit through the ball. Like I remember, I even watched Buenos Aires a few matches. And when he hits a forehand as he can do it, guy's off balance straight away, and that's not many players can do it. Novak can do it with his forehand, and that's why he has the potential to be on this record list, but that's not easy, and you have to play good every week, every year.
Do you like the thought of having the chance to play against him, the challenge, I suppose, a different type of challenge?
I would say I'm different in this way. I kind of, in a way, don't care. I just want to go to the final and see who my opponent is. And I honestly don't care who that is. If it's Novak, great, tough match. If it's Rafa, great, tough match. If it's Carlos, great, tough match. But whoever is there, it's going to be a tough match. You have to try to win. You have to try to adapt tactically, physically, mentally. And for sure, I'm sure if we're going to play great tennis with Carlos, we could see each other a lot of the times during many tournaments. Especially hard courts, and that could be great. But we never played since Wimbledon, but that was long ago, and he was not the same. So I would honestly not even count this match too much.
We'll let you go in just a minute because you've got a streak to keep up, an Iga Świątek-esque streak. Final question I just wanted to ask you just occurred to me. You strike me as a very intelligent tennis player person, and that's something that you...
Thanks a lot.
It's something that you use on the court, right? You make tactical mid-match adjustments, which not everybody does out there. What's the Andre Agassi quote, David, of you either have to... Or is it a Jimmy Connors quote? You either have to be super smart or really stupid to be at the very top of the game. I'm butchering...
That's actually a great quote.
I'm butchering the quote, but that's... That's
actually an amazing quote.
Do you think that is true?
Because at least me, I don't speak too much to other tennis players about how do you think during the game, because then you kind of also will have to give away what you think. And sometimes it happens to me, let's say, it's a really stupid example, but I don't know, when the guy slices, I would mostly go inside in. And then sometimes I would mix it up and go inside out. And it happens in some matches where the guy slices, and I'm like, okay, this one I'm going inside out to surprise him. And the guy is there. I'm like, you either have to be really smart to be there or you have to be really stupid because I was supposed to go inside in. And there are so many moments like this. Like, I don't know, you go... four times, serve down the tee, then you're like, okay, that's a good moment to mix it up. The guy's there. You're like, I have to be either really smart or really stupid. So it's, I would say tennis is, that's probably the best quote I heard in my life. So,
and I've butchered it. Yeah, great.
Yeah, that's really funny. And I think you can say it about everyone and anything that you see.
You can have that as your own now.
Yeah, great. I'll claim it as an original. Daniil, thank you very much for joining us. And good luck for the streak.
Thanks a lot. We'll try my best.
Yeah, we'll Lovely enjoy watching. You. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
We're just going to keep on chatting amongst ourselves. David's got two microphones.
Why not? Why not have two? I'll have Daniel's as well. Cheers, Daniel.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating, really, to get his insight into the day-to-day and to see the way he thinks, really, and as he's going along. I mean, it's just so interesting that element at the end. I'm always fascinated about the sort of inner dialogue of a player, and it's not the same for every player. You know, there are some players that, I mean, honestly, I think if we were to have Pete Sampras here right now, I don't think he had a conversation in his head. I think he was so programmed innately to do what he does. He didn't need to have any, he didn't want thoughts. I'm sure we had somebody not that long ago tell us, I don't want to think on the tennis court at all. And yet you've got someone like Daniil, who he is very cerebral as a tennis player. And there are others too that you get the sense are just having conversations. Well, you see them having conversations with themselves sometimes, but they're just trying to work it out.
Yeah, it makes total sense to me. For me, like, that there is nothing worse than an inner monologue. My inner monologue will always be saying, well, that was rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, I go to pieces.
You know, if I could turn my brain off doing sport, even at my low level, I would happily do that, because my brain does me no favours. It's one of the reasons why I love presenting live TV, because my inner monologue dies, and it's the only time I ever feel truly in the moment and understand what people mean when they say in the moment. The rest of the time I'm thinking almost constantly, why did I say that? It makes sense to me, and I think you've got to trust your inner monologue pretty consistently, as Medvedev seems to be able to use it as an asset the way he seems to.
Yeah. Gosh, he's fascinating, isn't it? Like, I don't think there are many I don't think there are many tennis players that we could sit down with and just have that conversation with that we just had there and then, and be so sort of hanging on every word. I really wanted to know what he was saying the whole time.
He has put himself on the backhand list.
Listen, I think that's fair. He was on my five.
I think it is fair. I mean, we didn't specify that it is only five, but I mean, I think he'd be on my five, certainly for a double-handed backhand, and I actually think I'd probably put him on there either way, because it seems so uncomplicated, that stroke from him, and yet it's also damaging.
And I love that he can contort his body into weird positions and hit his backhand.
There's nothing better than a still screenshot of Medvedev mid-shot.
Particularly the forehand follow-through.
He can look like a sort of corkscrew.
Yeah.
So Medvedev through to face.
And I was going to say, I think actually the timing worked out so perfectly of Medvedev coming in that I don't actually think we even mentioned what it was that he said.
Let's do just that.
Matt did put the earphones in to make sure he got it word for word
transcription.
So, Matt,
of aggro.
What did Daniil Medvedev say when he lost that second set?
Yes, I had to go back and scroll and transcribe, because I could tell that it was funny just from his gestures. And he'd been gesturing over to Cedric Mourier at the side of the court. And you clocked, David, that he seemed to be cross about the court rather than necessarily about how he was playing. And that turned out to be true, because he said to umpire Mohamed Leani after losing the second set, I'm going to pee as slow as this court. The court is slow, so I go slow. And Mohamed Leani said, you have to accept this. You're a professional. And he said, I don't accept this. They say on the fact sheet that this is hard courts. This is not hard courts.
We said we were hoping for clay court Medvedev, and I think we're getting clay court Medvedev.
Yeah,
and
we
love it. He's got Zverev in the next round. I know that their head-to-head is six apiece, but you have to put Medvedev as the favourite for that, you know, long peas or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Zverev's still working his way back, isn't he, after that very long layoff because of that horrible ankle injury that he sustained at Roland Garros last year. He had got that one win, hadn't he, at the Tour Finals the year before
which
that?
Which was actually their last meeting.
Is it?
Yeah. Right, I mean, yeah. Medvedev himself reminded me of that in his on-court interview. The head-to-head was put to him, and he was able to reel off, you know, all of their meetings and say, we haven't met for precisely 422 days or whatever it was.
It's going to be very interesting, though, on this surface, given how it's clearly not just a technical problem for him. It's also in his head.
It's in his head.
He's bothered by it. And yes, he's saying all the players are talking about it. And I don't doubt that. I think there is a view that this court is tricky for certain players. But that's very difficult for him now to go and keep on winning without thinking about that element of the match. And Zverev does hit a bigger ball than he does. Mm. So, you know... I just think Medvedev is technically more sound, and he's obviously not had a 6 month layoff with an ankle injury. So, and he's had all these wins in a row. So you'd have to make him the favourite.
I think there's an element with Medvedev of he knows he can only whinge about this stuff when he's winning. Mm. He doesn't want to be a whinging loser. Yeah. So when he's riding high like he is, he thinks, I'll get all my gripes out on the table now so no one can say I'm being salty. Let's stick with the men's draw and round up significant things that we've seen over the last couple of days. Should we do Alcaraz, seeing as we talked so much about Alcaraz, the famous Carlos Alcaraz? He's looking like the famous Carlos Alcaraz, isn't he? My goodness.
He occupied our evening the night before, didn't he, in the apartment in Tennis Podcast Towers here in Indian Wells, and it was just he's an experience in himself. Doesn't matter what the match is. I mean, he played Thanasi Kokkinakis, and you don't even spend much time looking down that end of the court, because what Alcaraz is doing is so beguiling, so totally dominating in terms of your attention.
Absolutely, yeah. They look like two very different players out there, and I very much enjoyed
it. You can't help it, can you?
Right, we interrupt this high-level tennis analysis to be forced to disclose something to you all, which may make
works.
Us lose all our listeners, Matt. Yeah. So
I'm prepared
this
to
is
them.
On you.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, go on then. I wasn't involved in this, so no. I can't.
You are now.
I can't recount it.
Right. So David's been trying to track down Juan Carlos Ferrero for a chit-chat about Carlos Alcaraz and about the movement.
Which I successfully did.
Successfully did.
Today.
Great.
And
mission
you'll hear
accomplished.
That in a day or two.
Great journalism from David.
Great journalism.
Thank you.
I'd like to make that point very, very strongly.
I spotted him immediately. He came over and we had a lovely chat, and you'll hear it, folks. Mm.
So yesterday, David was very much on the lookout for Juan Carlos Ferrero. And David and I wander into the press room around about 5 o'clock. So between sessions, there was a long gap between sessions yesterday. Alcaraz is due to play in the night session. And we see, and again, we'd like to stress, press seats very high up.
I mean, at the top of the stadium.
At the top of the stadium. It's a very big stadium. David and
pretty
I,
pretty much at the top
David
of the
and I wander in.
Second tier.
And David says, oh, well... That's where Alcaraz is. He's hitting because he hadn't been on the practice schedule. And David said, "Oh, well, that's because he was practicing on the centre court." And so I go, "Oh yeah, of course, David. Of course, that's what it is. Let's have a look for Juan Carlos Ferrero." And we stand there and we look around the court. There's absolutely no sign of Juan Carlos Ferrero. And I once again am struck by the size of Carlos Alcaraz, I was talking about a couple of days ago.
Towering.
I said the words. I think he's had a
growth spurt.
I think he's had a growth spurt. Anyway.
He's also had a haircut.
We had a lovely chat, didn't we, David? We had a lovely time watching Carlos Alcaraz hit. I did think that backhand's a bit shit, but I thought he was having a light warm-up ahead of his match. He didn't want it hit full stride. Anyway, we're back at Tennis Podcast Towers. We're having a lovely evening.
Several hours later.
We're eating our ribs. David goes really quiet.
Because Carlos Alcaraz and Thanasi Kokkinakis walked out onto the court on our TV several hours later. And I said, I've just realised why Carlos Alcaraz looked so tall, Catherine, and why Juan Carlos Ferrero wasn't there. It's because we were watching Thanasi Kokkinakis practice and not Carlos Alcaraz, who hasn't had a haircut and hasn't grown 3 inches. But it was a long distance from us. And Matt is struggling to retain any sort of respect for the people that employed him all those years ago.
Yeah, just.
Is it worth us even carrying on with this
just
pod?
Unable to recognise one of the most electric players of all time.
Look,
and the US
Kokkinakis' forehand looked great in practice. Yeah, I don't know what happened to it in the match. Wasn't there.
So funny.
There was a, seeing as I've already sworn on this podcast
several times
in the presence of Daniil Medvedev, we've already displeased your mum, David. I'm going to do it again to recount the moment that Thanasi Kokkinakis, it was lip read because it was under his breath, but Kokkinakis, it was what, a set and 3-1 or something, and another blistering winner, the like of which Kokkinakis and most players on tour will never ever be able to hit, just screamed past him. And Kokkinakis, just trudging back to the chair under his breath, goes, "Fuck me."
and that summed it up.
That summed up,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
match. It looks like a different sport when he's playing like
do
that.
Do you believe Daniel when he says he was watching that and he wasn't trying to work out what he would do?
Yes, I do, actually, because he then said that he would go back to that memory and use it to work out what he would try to do. But I think he's so in the moment and enjoying the match that he's able to not be Daniil Medvedev the player when he's watching it. He's kind of able to be the fan. But of course he's gathering that information, even if it's subconsciously.
I do love it when tennis players watch tennis.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, I know they need to have more in the life and all the rest of it, but I love it when tennis players are tennis fans.
Well, that's been one of the great things about the team events that we've seen, you know, Laver Cup, United Cup, having players on the sideline watching is great. And yeah, I mean, just sort of final note on Alcaraz, he looked much better than I thought he was going to look, actually, considering last time we saw him, he was injured and quite badly injured and really compromised. And I know Juan Carlos Ferrero told Chris Clary that Alcaraz was 100%, but I did not detect any sign of him looking compromised or even thinking about not going full pelt to reach a ball or not hit his forehand full pelt. He just looked exceptional. And he gave a quote afterwards saying, "I try to make people enjoy watching tennis. The way I play, I think they love it." And that just,
I love that, he's
that
aware
just
of
says
that.
Everything, doesn't it? He's so, as you said, he's so keen to put on a show out there.
I love a player who wants to do that.
Yeah.
I said while we were watching last night that he's the only player, and one of the only players ever, that I get enjoyment still from watching a thrashing. Mm. I never felt that way about Roger Federer, and I felt like I missed out on something by never feeling that way. You know, I loved watching Roger Federer, but generally only, you know, I just always want a competitive match. I always say that. And I would rather see Alcaraz against Djokovic going toe-to-toe for 5 sets, don't get me wrong, but I still get a lot of pleasure from just watching Alcaraz be Alcaraz in the kind of form that he was in last night. What else have we seen? Andy Murray is still in the tournament, and he is in the tournament by virtue, hold on to your hats, folks, of a straight sets win.
Yeah.
His first since October 2022, a stat which he was very, 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 very aware of, David.
Oh, it was fascinating to sort of talk to him afterwards and just see. I think how proud he is of his 3-set record in the last 6 months, because that had become a problem of not being able to win these close dogfights, and suddenly that's all he can win, and he's won 7 of those this year. But the lack of a straight sets victory had become an issue. And, you know, he came into the press conference. It was a good chat like it normally is, but he was particularly interesting when our colleague Russell Fuller from the BBC spoke to him and asked him about that record and about the fact that he'd got one under his belt again. And he made us all laugh. He said, you know, I can... I also was at breakfast today, and I saw the last person that I beat in straight sets, who was
which was backhand list contender Alejandro Davidovich Fokina.
Yeah, and he said, I probably shouldn't have said it, but when he came up to me and we were just having a little bit of a chat, Alejandro said to me, "Oh, lot of three set matches you're having, aren't you? And he said, yeah, except against you.
And he swore at him in Spanish.
Yeah. which was great stuff. And you could see Andy Murray's sort of mischievous little face as he delivered that line.
He's loving life at the moment,
yeah,
isn't he, Murray?
And he's loving the fact that he's going to face his young British compatriot, Jack Draper, who's beaten Dan Evans in the previous round. It was 6-4, 6-2, and actually the first set was really close, believe it or not. I mean, there were a lot of breakback points, opportunities for Evans. But that tells me, I think, I don't know what you think, how far Draper has come already. He thrashed somebody 6-1, 6-1 in the first round. He's beaten Evans 6-4, 6-2. Another answer that Andy Murray gave to Russell was his face lighting up, saying, you should have seen the practice session we had recently in Dubai, me and Jack Draper. Some of the rallies were just ridiculous. And he could see he loves the challenge. He can't wait for them to get out there. And he clearly really likes Catherine. Jack Draper. I mean, that
as a player
across,
and a person.
Yeah, he loves
he
him.
Was gushing about
yeah.
him. Absolutely gushing. And that's our experience as well. We had just a very brief encounter, didn't we, with him on our first day here, just as we were walking into the press room. And I said this to both of you, take tennis player out of it. Most 21-year-old boys, what is he, 20, 21, they don't do a lot of eye contact. They're not necessarily that. David, you've been a 21-year-old boy.
Awkward.
A bit awkward.
Yeah, they're a bit uncomfortable.
Especially, he strikes me as pretty shy, Jack Draper as well. Mm. But he went out of his way to give us a fist bump and really look us in the eye and acknowledge us. And I was very impressed by that.
Yeah, I was too. And one fascinating note about the room that we're sitting in right now, which is interview room 3. Is that the lights have just completely gone out and we are sitting in pitch darkness. Matt has managed to get out of his chair and go and turn them back on. So thank you very much for that, Matt.
That was Madrid 2019 vibes, where I did a whole interview with Chris Clary in the dark.
And there was that one at the Billie Jean King Cup when the lights just went out on you
yep.
in the middle of our remote
yep.
podcast as well.
Maybe it's me.
Maybe it's you. But I mean, just to finish that point on Jack Draper, and he is... He's just a really impressive young man. I mean, I'm sort of proud that he's a British tennis player. That he's somebody you want representing the country, like, and just representing the sport. He's just think he's a really cool guy.
It's the sweet spot of having chutzpah but not being a douchebag.
Yeah.
See also Ben Shelton. I know there's some people that think Ben Shelton's a bit much. I know there are
really
perhaps
are
other players in the locker room that don't love his chest thumping energy.
I
completely agree with you. I love it. I think he walks that line for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
If you're a tennis player getting annoyed by what Ben Shelton's doing, which is, you know, some pretty loud come ons, a few roars, get a grip. I mean, honestly. And I think it says a lot that, you know, someone like Taylor Fritz, I think, really likes and rates Ben Shelton. And actually, that match yesterday was probably my favourite match that I've watched here so far, certainly the second set. And it was interesting because it was Fritz coming back to the tournament that he won last year, California boy, his home tournament. He was got a, you know, he's meant to be the crowd favourite. And he's up against Ben Shelton, who sort of can't help but be the crowd favourite because of the way he plays and the way he is. And yet still, Fritz wasn't annoyed at Ben Shelton about that. He just recognised that he's got charisma and personality in a great game. And yeah, we spoke the other day about the ridiculous athletic feats that we've seen Ben Shelton perform off a tennis court this week already. What I love is how he uses his athleticism on the court. This was the first time I'd watched him live, and his capacity to get to the net and leap into shots and leap into his serve. I mean, that service motion must just be the envy of everyone on the tour, especially because it's a lefty serve as well. He's got so much game. And, you know, still loads that he can improve as well. And Fritz did do brilliantly, I think, to turn that match around. He was in trouble there. I thought it was really impressive grit from Fritz. But, yeah, I think a lot of people left that match as even bigger Ben Shelton fans than they already were, because he just brought it.
It's scary how much he's improved in just 6 weeks, isn't it? He looks a notably better player than the Australian Open.
If somebody can package, and that's him and obviously his team, if they can package his game and keep its raw power and ferocity and bounce and all the things that he brings to the court, because you don't want to dull that too much. You don't want to shave the edges off and smooth that over too much, because the roughness is part of what makes it so exhilarating to watch, but also so frightening to play against. But he's got to find ways to win efficient points, because I mean, you know, he's going to be on so many highlight reels in the next couple of years, which is great. But I also think that there is potential, health permitting. I mean, he's so physical that I always worry for the body of a player who's as physical as he is, who's throwing himself around the way he does. But if he can keep fit, there is potential for him to be top five in the world. There is no obvious limit, to my eye anyway. Now, coaches, they tend to have a good look at players like him and figure stuff out, ways to blunt them. But just hope they get it right. Hope they get his development right.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Nice.
On to the women's draw we go, and we start with a complaint directed towards Petra Kvitova and Yelena Ostapenko, who sort of three quarters delivered the most amazing tennis match of all time before, well, debatable who went and ruined it. But anyway, Ostapenko, first set, 6-love. Kvitova, second set, 6-love. Third set, Kvitova is 4-love, then it's 4-all, and at this point, given the 6-love pattern is ruined, we're thinking, okay, fine, tie break. Perfect. No. Petra Kvitova had other ideas. Just a pedestrian 6-4 third set.
Except it meant, because of the timeout at 4-all, it meant that, and the immediate break for Kvitova, who'd taken that medical timeout without a sit down, this was just a sort of, I need a medical timeout for a finger injury of some description. It meant that we got the most delicious handshake between the two, in which Yelena Ostapenko gripped Petra Kvitova's hand, who I think was trying to explain herself, and I don't know whether she was trying to apologise, but she was in the press conference at the same time as Daniel was talking to us, so we weren't able to hear it. But I got the sense she was trying to smooth it over. And Ostapenko was sort of smiling as if to say, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course you needed it then, didn't you? Yeah, I know. It was amazing.
And I'm going to use this moment to make a plea to tennis, I think. We need to be hearing those conversations at the net between players. Like,
yes.
I do understand why making players up for a whole match might be difficult. It would be a lot of heavy breathing, and it would be weird.
but stick a mic on the net, or something that can get that moment.
Absolutely. We were talking to Pam Shriver yesterday, and she was saying how much she loved watching the golf recently on the PGA Tour, where they have been miking up players just for a hole or two, and they've been speaking to commentators while they're about to hit their shots. And obviously, you know, you can do that a little bit more in golf because, you know, there are even more natural breaks in play than there are in tennis.
And less heavy breathing as well.
And you literally do think through your every shot that you play. You know, there's no instinct, I suppose, or far less. But, you know, that's come about because the PGA Tour has been shaken up by the LIV golf that's come about. They've had to make adjustments. And, you know, I just think tennis, you know, we've talked about the potential threat, you know, from some sort of Saudi money or league that could come into tennis. I'm taking a moment, a very small moment between Ostapenko and Petra Kvitova, making a huge point here and making a probably a far too big a deal out of it.
But there's more that could be done.
I've always feel like tennis should be trying things, being more innovative and getting fan experience.
You know, we saw at the ATP Cup you can mic up those areas and get a message over to the viewer of what people are thinking, saying. And yes, there'll be some moments that might be a little bit unpalatable for some, you know, and they might think, oh, I don't want to hear that. But there'll be lots of gold, and also, you know, so be it. Mm. So be it if some people don't like what they hear. I'd rather hear what's real.
Yeah.
I'd rather hear what's going on. Let me know, as a viewer, what these people are saying.
Yeah. We shouldn't have to wait 45 minutes, an hour for a press conference, and most fans are not going to know what was said in the press conference.
And often
it's just such an opportunity.
Afterwards might be media trained out of telling us. So we shouldn't be having to guess.
Agreed. Kvitova now plays Jessica Pegula in the round of 16, which Pegula has won back-to-back three setters. She looks like she's searching a bit, Pegula, at the moment. I mean, it's one of those, where's the balance between impressive that she's winning anyway and a bit worrying that she's not dominating the way she has been recently?
Yes, I think she's just not quite playing as well as she has been recently. She talks a lot in her press conference about really struggling with her string tension here because of the conditions. You know,
she should chat to Daniil.
And she made a very interesting point, I thought, that against Georgie a couple of nights ago, she was last on, it was cold, there wasn't a huge crowd left, and she said she needed to pump herself up, she needed to get herself going, she was flat. Today, she actually had the opposite problem. She was playing heat of the day, massive crowd against an opponent who was firing. She needed to calm herself down. And I thought that was really fascinating self-awareness. And I don't know how many players would be able to make that mid-match switch, that mid-match adjustment. Some players have one mode, one gear. And Pegula's temperament is something we've always admired and talked about. And I think it helped her, you know. She was able to raise it when she needed, lower it when she needed, and yeah, she's come through a couple of tricky matches there and is still in the draw. So yeah, a couple of interesting matches from Jessica Pegula so far, I think.
And I'm interested in Pegula Kvitova as well. In fact, I think a lot of the last couple of days in the women's draw has been about setting up really mouth-watering either second or third round matches. We're at that stage of the tournament, folks, where I don't know where we are. It's deeply confusing. Yeah. So it's some second round. Some, I'm going to talk about a bunch of matches now, all of which are really cool. Some are second round. Some are round of 16. No?
I don't think any are second round. Some are third round.
Some are third round.
Some are
she did say she
last 16.
Some are last 16. Great. Glad we've got that straight. I give you Iga Swiatek finally against Bianca Andreescu.
We deserve this.
Yes. We can have nice things.
It's going to be very interesting, isn't it? To see, I mean, I'm not sure what difference the court makes based on everything that Daniel was saying to us.
Well, they've both won the tournament.
Yes, so, of course. That's where we discovered Andreescu, really, isn't it? At, at, as a contender at the very, very highest level. That's when we ended up thinking this woman's going to win the US Open, and sure enough, she did. Just want to see the real Andreescu out there and see what happens when she takes on the UK.
Yeah, me too. There was some incredible crowd energy coming from Andreescu's match against Peyton Stearns the other night. And
the NCAA women's champion.
Yeah. And that to me seemed like quite an encouraging scoreline and result and performance from Andreescu, because she seemed to get better as the match went on. I've watched some Andreescu matches this year where she's faded. You know, she started out, she's hit a purple patch of form, and we're like, oh, she's going to win the Australian Open after like one rally. Probably says more about us than it does Bianca Andreescu.
Sorry, Matt, my credibility is already in the toilet.
Yeah, me too. Mine too.
Nothing fine to lose.
The podcast's just done.
But so I think it encouraging for Andreescu there. Just, you've got to have your head right, I think, when you're going on court to face Iga Świątek at the moment. And I do believe Andreescu will. Like, she's going to believe in herself. Because, you know, we saw what Iga Świątek did just a couple of days ago. She won the first 11 games of her match here. I was alerted to the fact that she dropped a game by hearing, you know, an ironic, huge cheer for Claire Liu finally winning a game. That sinking feeling. That, you know, the crowd is having to do that. But Świątek playing well, of course. There was one rally where she just retrieved from one side to the other and hit an incredible winner. But if Andreescu can get her teeth into the match, make it a bit of a scrap, that feels like maybe her best chance.
I mean, she does love a scrap.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree
just,
with that.
Just trying to get to that place.
I'm not delusional. I know Świątek is the very heavy favourite, and it could well be, you know, 6-1, 6-2, because that's what Świątek does to very good players. But I do have a sneaky hope that it could be something like what we want it to be, that match. So, fingers crossed. Sabalenka-Krejcikova is happening.
Oh, good. Because that was on ice, wasn't it, in terms of Krejcikova's chances of getting there.
She has won.
She has won.
6-2 in the third.
Okay. No offence to her opponent, but I wanted to see Sabalenka against Krejcikova.
Yeah, I really want to see Sabalenka against Krejcikova.
They played each other a couple of weeks ago, didn't they? When Krejcikova won that title, I think Sabalenka won a 6-love set in that match.
Yeah, she was a set and a break up, absolutely cruising. And then Krejcikova came back to win. I think that was the match where she found her form, found her confidence. And a big one that match for our newsletter predictions, because some people have gone Sabalenka to win the tournament.
Some people have gone
both of us.
Matthew, I believe, who's winning, has gone Krejcikova.
Okay, Matthew.
So someone's going out.
Okay. Emma Raducanu tomorrow, third round action against Beatriz Haddad-Maia.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's a tough match.
Leila Fernandez against Caroline Garcia. Yes, please.
Yes.
Yeah. That one's first up on Stadium One tomorrow. I feel like that could have been night session, but of course, Andreescu Świątek is night session, and I'm fine with that. Rybakina playing Badosa. They were doubles partners, unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Lost in the first round of the doubles, and now they're playing in singles.
Some good matches here, aren't they?
Yeah. I'm pleased. Look, I know it's only a couple of wins. I'm pleased to see Badosa getting
who's
those
she been beating?
couple of wins.
Have you any idea who she's beaten along the way?
She beat Nuria Perithas Diaz in straight sets. Didn't see the match, but I will be seeking out Badosa Rybakina, because Rybakina had a tight one. She beat Kenin in two tie breaks, I think. And haven't quite gauged their form here yet. But I feel a little bit maybe similarly about Badosa as I do about Raducanu, in a way, in that I just think lower expectations and less focus on them might end up helping them a bit. I mean, Raducanu was pretty open about that in her press conference, and just competing again. You know, she said playing and not playing that well is a whole lot better than being injured and not being able to play. So, you know, she's feeling good that she's able to do that. And I think she has been you know, no one expected this from Raducanu, considering where she was a few days ago. And her whole career has been, she plays well when you least expect it. See, winning the US Open as a qualifier. And I think that's helpful for her, and maybe it is for Barossa as well. She was very open last year about, you know, the pressure and struggle that she felt when she got to the top of the sport. And, yeah, so...
From me, yeah.
Yeah, predicting her to win every
week. She got to the
top
and I predicted she would win everything for about 6 months. Yeah, I really wish her well. Fascinating one against Rybakina. Ons Jabeur won on her comeback from surgery. I was pleased to see that. All due respect to Magdalena Freck, but I was a bit worried about Ons Jabeur coming in here. I wasn't sure if she was quite ready. And it wasn't vintage Jabeur, but compared to what we saw with her exit at the Australian Open, which was quite harrowing at the end, really, wasn't it? Her hunched over in the corridor, you know, pretty devastated, not just at the loss, because obviously she went in thinking she could maybe win that title, but also I think there was a lot going on there, and sort of knew that the injury was significant and it would mean some time away. And actually, this turnaround is a lot quicker than I was expecting for Jabeur.
Yeah, me too. And I think it was a real shame for her to have to miss the Middle East swing.
Mm.
And also, one of the differences between the WTA Tour and the ATP Tour is that if you're injured in February on the WTA side, you miss some really big events and a lot of points. Like she said, I've missed 2 500s, Abu Dhabi and Doha, and I've missed 1,000, which is Dubai this year. So she's already missed a lot, and she's spoken about wanting to get to world number one. And, you know, if you then miss Indian Wells and Miami as well, suddenly that becomes really hard to do. So she probably maybe did rush back a little bit. She said the knee is 80% fine in terms of pain. She just hasn't done all the work yet for it to be as strong as it is, or for it to, you know, quite have the movement. So she is a little bit compromised on court. But yeah, I think encouraging to get a win. Her reaction to finding out her opponent in the next round was very amusing, because she plays Markéta Vondroušová, who was the person who beat her at the Australian Open, and her reaction was, oh shit.
Let's definitely put an explicit tag on this podcast. It was a shame actually that match at the Australian Open ended up being about Jabeur's injury so much, because it's a fun matchup.
It is.
I mean, Vondroušová is a bonkers tennis player to me. I do not know what is coming out of Vondroušová's racket on any given day. But she's fun. You know, she can make good matches. She's a bit different, and that applies to Jabeur as well. And I think it'll be a bit of wizardry.
That's definitely the match for the drop shot counter. Like,
yes.
We need to know how many drop shots are played in that match, because I imagine it will be a lot. They both love that shot.
Mm, yes, please, for that one. Final yes, please, just back to the men very quickly, is Wawrinka against Rune tomorrow.
Oh.
The rematch.
Yeah. The last time they played one another, Wawrinka at the net, having been beaten, said... stop being a baby on the court, or something along those lines.
I think that exactly those lines.
Yes. So, which I did, in hindsight now, I feel a bit sorry for Rune about that. You know, I think he's behaved like a brat several times over the last couple of years, and worse, as in that the one moment that we've talked about a lot, when he used that that homophobic slur. But the fact is that I think he is trying to work it out. He's trying to work out who he is and work out how to behave on the court and get through these situations. And he's sometimes failing. I think he's probably starting to get better at it. I did think, God, Stan, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? But anyway, you know, I also understand opponents getting wound up by it. So hopefully they can have a good match. And I know I like my aggro, but I almost sort of hope that that one ends all right.
Who is this guy?
I like the journey, the story arc.
Oh dear! Right, let's wrap things up on that note and have a few quiet words with David.
Catherine wants a punch up.
I really do. I want it to be just right in the sweet spot of aggro.
Not unpleasant, nastily. Just a little bit of spice.
I want someone to claim to go to threaten to go for a really long pee. That is. That's all I want from that match. Right, our episode mascots for today are Lucy, a black 5-year-old German Shepherd mix, and Ella, a 2-year-old pit bull mix. They're adopted siblings owned by Tim Byrne, and we don't have confirmed that they're friends, but my goodness me, they look like close friends in this photo. Ella is leaning in to Lucy, and it's just lovely. They've got their ears are pricked up. They really look like they're listening to the podcast.
Well, I'm up for
so
that, yeah.
It's lovely. You'll
I'm
get a,
believe that.
You'll get a picture of them in the newsletter. If you haven't subscribed to the newsletter, what are you playing at? Not least because we have a brand spanking new competition offered by our partners On Location, who have brought us out here to Indian Wells. It is a heck of a tournament, a competition prize, folks. And it is available to US and UK newsletter subscribers. We're really sorry that we're not in a position to offer it to listeners resident in other countries. We hope to be able to do that in the future. But for now, listeners in the US and the UK, friends of the pod, can enter a competition to win an incredible package. A 3-night stay at a 4-star hotel here in Indian Wells 2024 with tickets to the semi-finals and finals of both the men's and the women's competition. You've got all your VIP stuff taken care of. You've got your transportation, breakfast with, I don't know, Katerina Siniakova, possibly, maybe, if you fancy it. And it's an incredible prize. And if you'd like to enter, the URL, and this is the right URL to go to, is toursfortennis.com/podcast/TTP. Tours, the number 4, tennis.com/podcast/TTP. And also, if you are going to be at Indian Wells tomorrow, we're doing our meet and greets at the Steve Fergles booth on site at 2:00, between 2 and 2:30 tomorrow. We are fitting it in around a round of golf and some tennis watching and some podcasting. So, you know, busy day.
Can't wait.
It's a tough old time we're having work, out here. And anyone that does come and see us at the Steve Fergles booth and ends up booking a package for a Steve Fergles International Tennis Tour will get a 5% discount.
Yeah.
On said tennis tour. And you get to meet us. So
don't let that put you off.
Mega. Mega. No, we've absolutely loved meeting you all. Don't listen to David again. Credibility in the toilet. We've loved meeting you all, so do keep coming. We are not getting complacent about the fact that people are actually coming. Please do still come. The risk of embarrassment remains. Right then, we have our mascots. David has Maisie, I've got Xenia, and Matt has Darwin. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah, brackets, thanks for the chocolate, and Drew. And we have shout outs.
We have Jean Pounier, who is Swiss, but living in Scottsdale, Arizona.
We have had a few listeners from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah, we have. Have we had any tennis Jean?
Leolia Jean-Jean.
Very well done.
And Jean-Julien Roger.
Oh, yes.
Very good.
That's better, actually.
There must be a Jean-Christophe in tennis. Anyway. Thank you, Jean.
Yeah, thank you, Jean.
We've also got Skip Schwartzman.
Oh.
Right, Skip.
We know Skip.
Skip's ever so nice.
Schwartzman without the T.
So, okay.
But we can kind of go
church.
Diego.
Absolutely. Yeah. Same church. And Skip is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Skip.
Thanks, Skip.
And finally, we have Bob Stocking, who we have met twice
in 3 days.
We're so desperate not to have an empty queue that Bob decided to come twice.
He's really lovely to see him. What a lovely man.
Yeah. And Bob says, my greatest tennis moment was being approached by a member of my club who said, you're famous to me. You introduced an episode of the Tennis Podcast.
Oh, I love that.
That's amazing.
Bob, thank you for your support in all the ways. It is much appreciated. We will be back with our next pod in a couple of days' time, and then we're going to be daily with you throughout the business end of the tournament from Indian Wells, the BNP Paribas Open. Thanks for On Location. That is why we are here. Thank you for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.